Hi, Rach.
Hi, Rob.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm not bad, not bad. I've got AI on my mind at the moment, specifically about how people are using it in their personal lives. And you're my guinea pig for this question. So how are you actually using like ChatGPT or Perplexity in like your own life right now?
I am using AI basically as my unpaid assistant. Mm-hmm. I think at work it refines my emails, helps me sound smarter.
It's been a lot of effort in then already.
Exactly. So it's overworking. And then in my personal life, I think, you know, it's my doctor. It's explaining my medical results, helping me overanalyze Zillow listings for new homes. And then also they are a beauty specialist and they're helping me color match my makeup. So,
oh, right. How's that going?
Not well, but at this point, AI is really just
augmenting your adult life.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome back to another episode of a Win-Win Marketing Podcast. And welcome back to the podcast too, to you, Rachel Tyra. Good to have you back. How are you doing?
Hi, Rob. It's good to be back as your co-host. You missed that part. Following on last week's episode, we're once again doing something a little different this week. While we were out in Chicago for Think Tank Americas, we sat down with Lily Ray and Max Willens off the back of their session. And then for anyone who doesn't know, they are in fact returning guests. Lily joined us at last year's Think Tank in Portugal. And then Max appeared in our 2026 predictions episode in January with you and I, Rob.
That's right. And for those of you who didn't listen to those episodes and don't know these guys, they're really, really interesting, well-informed figures from across the industry. So Max Willens is principal analyst at eMarketer, and he specializes with a focus on affiliate and creator. And then Lily Ray is founder of Algorithmic, but also a kind of SEO guru who I'm sure many listeners are familiar with from her regular posting on LinkedIn about the latest kind of algorithm changes and updates from Google, etc. So she also happened to be our keynote speaker for day two, where she shared a lot of her kind of findings from recent analysis with the audience at Think Tank. So among those things, I would say that kind of like one of the main takeaways was the fact that whilst there's been a lot of kind of analysis around the fact that GEO or AEO, however you choose to label it, this new kind of optimization of how you can show up in LLM citations is this new novel thing in the industry that people need to be aware of and educate themselves around. Actually, Lily's analysis and even more of the recent kind of updates and guidelines from Google themselves suggest that SEO principles are basically the foundation for a lot of this anyway. So if you're doing good SEO, the chances are that you're also going to show up pretty well as far as LLM's concerned. So kind of a bit of reassurance, I think, from in that regard. And I'm sure that many affiliates that are well-versed in these practices will be ensuring that they shore up those SEO foundations.
We talked about the changing role of affiliates and SEO in the age of LLMs and AI search overviews.
Yeah, and we also discussed the big publisher companies choosing to block AI from scraping their content, companies like the New York Times, for instance, as well as how influencers and content creators can tailor their content to appear in AI citations. Lily, Max, thanks so much for joining us at Think Tank. It's a great session we just heard this morning. Lily, you gave your keynote presentation, providing a breakdown of the latest trends in LLM search and AI visibility and its implications for affiliate marketers. And then you joined Max, who moderated the panel alongside a whole bunch of senior industry figures from across different perspectives, publisher, advertiser, agency, to provide their perspectives on that as well. So really insightful for the audience that were there, but we wanted to take this opportunity to also share some of the highlights from that conversation and that presentation with our listeners as well. And one of the first things that stood out to me, Lily, about your opening was just about talking about that speed of change that's happened. You talked about like 2 years ago, you know, was it ChatGPT or was it Google?
AI overviews.
Yeah, AI overviews. We're given this recommendation about eating rocks, and 2 years later, you're now able to build out like a CRM platform effectively on your mobile in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And is that unexpected for you about how rapid that acceleration has occurred?
Yes. Is it an order of magnitude kind of quicker than we were all expecting?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot of debate about whether or not large language models are truly going to be like the real AI technology that gets us to artificial general intelligence. So there's been speculation about how quickly these things could truly move. Will they always have these hallucinations and everything built into them? So I was kind of skeptical because I thought, you know, if Google, for one, you know, the biggest player in the space, is launching AI overviews, and even a year or two into AI overviews, we're still seeing these kind of like erroneous answers.
Yeah.
For us to now be where we are several months later, where we're seeing tools like Claude Cowork and Claude Code and just agentic, you know, AI search just changing and evolving so rapidly and being able to do so many things, I think we're in definitely that exponential part of the curve, and AI is learning from itself now. So it's happening much more quickly than I think I and many others anticipated. And it's honestly a little scary where things are going to go from here.
Yeah.
But I feel like everyone should just kind of buckle their seatbelt, because as fast as the growth has been, like one of the things that you pointed out in one of your slides is that if you kind of look past the top lines, like Claude's coming in real hot because they focused and they said, right, we're going to be the thing that helps you at work, mm-hmm. and just focus on that. And that's proven to be really valuable. And I feel like there's a, you know, good chance that someone will come along and say, we are going to be the one that really helps you shop, or that really helps you as a creative partner or something. And so like, as that happens, there's going to be a whole cascade of changes in innovation too. So like, as dizzying as this all is, like everybody just needs to kind of like buckle up, I think, because it's all like really just starting.
Yeah. I think Chelsea from Acceleration Partners, she threw out the question effectively in the statement that, is the industry actually prepared for this? Is it actually, you know, well set to kind of deal with this level of revolution? What was your kind of take or, you know, feeling around the sentiment from the panel?
The way she phrased it was super striking to me, where she just said, this is not an industry that's built for AI. Mm-hmm. I would say that really few industries are, but she also made the point that like, it's really well situated to deliver real value and, you know, have it play a kind of pivotal role. And like, I don't want to put words in Lily's mouth, but I feel like the other panelists, you know, seemed really excited by the prospect of what this could do for the industry, right? Because it has raised its profile in a way that a lot of publishers and agencies have been clamoring for a really long time. And like, because of how early everything is, like, it's really an open question, like how much one can capitalize on it. You know, there's a big opportunity, I think, to raise the profile of affiliate publishers, of making affiliate agencies much more of a kind of strategic component in how brands think about their marketing spending. Even the brands that are investing in it, right? Like the signal that you can get from an affiliate customer is, you know, unique and powerful in its own way. And so I feel like all the stakeholders, if they can, you know, not get too spun around by all the, you know, innovation that we all spend time talking about, like there's a lot of opportunity here. And so I think that even though everyone understands there's a lot to figure out, like I think there was kind of a cautious optimism. Does that broadly sound right to you?
Yeah, I think it's more of a mixed bag for a lot of the clients and everything that we speak to, because on one hand, yes, like there's so much new opportunity to use AI to create, you know, automations and create efficiencies in your workflow and to vibe code new things and create all these types of new products and everything. So on that end, people are very excited. There's all kinds of like inspiration for building new things in a way that we couldn't do before. And on the other side, you know, especially with publishers, there's just a lot of concern, a lot of fear, because I think, you know, tools like Google's AI mode, which is potentially rolling out any day now as the default version of search, they just fundamentally cut into traffic that many companies have been used to receiving from organic search for a long time. So I think there's hesitation and there's also excitement at the same time, but everything's changing so quickly that I think it's just hard to say where we're all going to land. But I imagine in the future, we'll probably see a more kind of healthy ecosystem where we have all these AI answers, we have these AI solutions, but we also still have to be fair to the people that are basically fueling all the content that AI is using to answer questions.
Yeah, because I feel like we had this conversation 12 months ago, Think Tank in Portugal, and it still felt very, very early, very novel. There was a lot of question marks. And I feel like there is a degree to which the platforms themselves have become pretty well established now. You talked a little bit about the growing user adoption, obviously, not just ChatGPT, but increasingly Google with its massive distribution across its other platforms. But I also just wonder whether or not that question around monetization, we still feel like we haven't maybe progressed that far in that regard in terms of potential solutions. And I wondered if either of you had an opinion on where you think that direction of travel is going.
This came up on the panel, like there was a big question about like, you know, what happens in a world where so much depends on CPCs, CPAs, like that's a mismatched metric, you know, in a world where like AI is potentially helping you convert a lot. But like, it's important to remember that we are still really early, right? Like one of the things that leapt out at me from the other, I'm now going to talk about other content that went on this week, but mm-hmm. like there was a really good presentation that your head of, I think, Insights and Measurement put mm-hmm. on. And
Gareth.
Yeah, Gareth. And he had a stat about like, based on some measurement you guys have done, like I think it's 0.24% of
it's,
all.
It's a fraction. It's tiny.
Yeah. And frankly, like until that number gets bigger, like the guys that are going to need the OpenAIs, the Googles, they're just not going to take the time, I think, to sort of furnish the data that will allow everybody to be on the footing of understanding like, okay, this is what the citation, you know, metric is. This is how effective this is. This is, these are all the people in the click stream that, you know, should be compensated. And so it's definitely important to get everybody thinking in a creative and novel way about it and probably like get some brands out of the like, it's got to be CPA. This is how we do it. This is how we've always done it. You got to get out of that mindset. But like, I do think we're still so early that the notion that some company is going to be like, I've got a new metric and a new, you know, system, and like that person's going to materialize in the next 6 months is, I think, a little misguided. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a bit unclear right now. I think one of the things I tried to get at in the presentation is the fact that, so according to some of the data that I looked at, 1 in 4 of the most heavily cited or retrieved sites in ChatGPT's top 100 most cited domains is technically an affiliate or a product review site. And I think that speaks to the fact that so many consumers are going to places like OpenAI and ChatGPT to have, you know, kind of like transactional or research conversations where they're learning about different types of products. And realistically, they rely on all the great work that product review sites have done to review different types of products. And, you know, we've also talked about different ways that these large language models and AI tools are reducing traffic that these sites are receiving over time. So a lot of these businesses have, for, you know, decades now, have been in the business of driving page views and, you know, monetizing through page views. And I think that that's an interesting conundrum, right? Where it's like these language models need that content, but they're not necessarily sending out that traffic anymore. So I think we're at the early days of having these conversations. And I think that we probably are going to need a lot more almost like existential conversations with the Googles and the OpenAIs about, if you need our content, we need to make sure that we're getting some value in return.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not an accident. This is something that is a couple of years old now, but like the first content partnerships that OpenAI struck, like over a third of them were with publishers that have really robust affiliate content operations. You know, like they knew from day one, we have to keep these guys happy or connected or compensated in some way. And they didn't mess around. And you can see that in the partnerships they forged. And as this grows, and I think they'll strike more partnerships, and, you know, the sort of shape of those is going to be really interesting to watch.
Do you think there's a different sentiment towards affiliate content from the LLM platforms than there has been historically with more traditional Google search? Because Google's had a very ambivalent, it's probably the best way of saying it, attitude, I think, towards affiliate content. Sometimes it's been penalized, sometimes there's been core updates, obviously, that have specifically targeted affiliate content and said that this is not what we want in our index to kind of rank highly. Mm-hmm. Is that changing, do you think?
Yeah, so Google has done all types of big updates especially in the last few years, to actually reduce the visibility of a lot of affiliate content. And I think that's because there were so many people that were able to just spin up an affiliate website, you know, and not necessarily put in the hard work that Google recommends that you do when you review products. So they also introduced something called the reviews ranking system a couple of years back, where they introduced product review updates, like specific algorithm updates, to basically reward content creators that are putting in the hard work of doing the product reviews, but in a way where they're taking videos of themselves, they're doing images, pictures, original photography of the reviews, extreme, you know, methodologies behind everything. Really the real evidence that they're real people reviewing the products, because so many affiliate companies were just not reviewing products and they don't have that actual evidence. So Google's done a lot of work to kind of clean that up. And I do think right now, you know, ChatGPT and the other LLMs do tend to pull in from more kind of like unknown affiliate sites. So in a sense, there's a little bit more opportunity right now because they're not as strict with what they're looking for. But I think ultimately it's going to land exactly where it landed with Google, which is that they want real evidence that the review content that they're looking at has been put together by somebody who's done the really hard work of creating really great review content. So I think there's only, honestly, like a small handful of players relative to the overall affiliate space that are really doing that hard work, and I think they'll be rewarded long term.
Yeah. So do you think it's those kind of first principles of SEO, eat is still basically going to be the kind of governing model of what content is going to be performing
So EAT is Experience, Expertise, Authority, and Trust. It's EEAT. That's the fundamental way that I think a lot of this works. And I think that what Google and eventually OpenAI are really going to be looking for. Mm-hmm. But Google actually has its own criteria for writing good reviews. A lot of people don't know this. So you can actually go onto Google and say, Google's guidelines for writing review content. And they have like 20 or 30 questions that they ask site owners to think about when they're producing review content. So check those first.
Yeah.
One of the things that kind of stood out from your session that I don't think maybe was talked about in Portugal or I've heard before, but the decision for some of these publishers or brand sites that actually block AI bots. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can speak a little bit to that, or maybe like what are the pros of that? What are the cons? Why would a site not want to be cited by these LLMs?
For sure. Yeah. So this is the big conversation, and it's definitely one that's happening more so in the publishing space. The thinking, and a lot of big companies, for example, New York Times are already doing this, where they're saying our content is so valuable that we don't want it being scraped and repurposed for free. Even if we can get that potential citation, mm-hmm. most people don't click on it. That's how these models are designed, right? These experiences are designed to keep users directly in the interface in the AI chatbot. So they decided maybe, you know, we'll get traffic and subscriptions through other methods, but we don't want a ChatGPT to be able to scrape our recent content. And when you have enough publishers that are banding together and doing that, now OpenAI has a data problem or a content problem because they don't have access to all the best news publications. So I think we're already seeing that in the news space. I don't know if we've seen it as much in the affiliate space, but you know, in theory, if all the big affiliate companies banded together and blocked, you know, OpenAI or Gemini or all the different LLMs from being able to access whether it's some of their content, all of their content, the LLMs are going to have no choice but to reach out and say, we need that content back. So what do you guys need for it, right? So I think these kind of conversations around like licensing of proprietary data, I think needs to continue to happen because the ecosystem can't support itself if they're just able to take everybody's information for free.
Do you think that's a feasible reality, like affiliates coming together and kind of taking that stance? Because I don't know, like at this point, maybe there's only a handful. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned, you know, a larger publisher in your speech, but I mean, that's a bold stance. And do they stand to potentially lose out there, or are there cons to that?
Yeah, I mean, you lose out on the immediate visibility and traffic that you could potentially benefit from right now with being cited in the AI platform. So this is a big debate. It's like, you have to look at what that looks like for you right now. I think I mentioned in my presentation, most companies are seeing 0 to 0.5% of their overall traffic coming from ChatGPT. So if you rely on traffic to make money, you know, you need to think about whether that traffic is actually valuable or that's enough traffic to sustain the business. But I don't know if it's realistic. You know, I think there's more and more, like I hear more and more events happening with the AI companies and the publishing industry to kind of have these conversations about what's fair. But I would recommend that at the very least, companies are putting pressure. I know, you know, the EU and everything putting a lot of pressure on these AI companies, because at the end of the day, they're just going to continue to take everybody's content until they can't. So we have to do something.
Yeah, I think to the question of like whether they'll be able to do it, I'm intrigued to see what happens with the sort of rise of publisher content marketplaces. There's sort of a bunch of different flavors of this, but effectively it's, you know, building infrastructure that allows for compensation when, you know, a scrape occurs. And I think that it's not an accident that a lot of publishers that have affiliate businesses have at least sniffed around them and, you know, maybe signaled interest in them. And so in a kind of mature competitive industry, like not a long history of collaboration, but I think that there's more infrastructure in place for a potential banding together than there might have been in other circumstances, for whatever that's worth. To Lily's point, I mean, maybe the LLMs take the lead and say, we're going to try to figure this out. But, you know, these specific circumstances are, I think, more conducive to something like that than we've seen historically.
And another thing, too, just to add to that, like if an AI, if one of the LLM companies or AI companies decided that we are going to introduce some type of system where you're getting compensated if we're using your content, people might make a decision to block the crawlers that are not doing that and to only allow that crawler. And that's going to result in them having much better content and much better answers. So there is some leverage that these companies have to potentially attract more companies allowing their content to be available to them.
We interviewed an affiliate publisher in the UK called YouFurnish. They're a kind of interior furnishings comparison website. And they had like an interesting take, I think, on LLM citations and wanting to be present there, less so for the referral traffic and more so for the brand equity, because there is this sense as a user that if that your name is showing up, you get that sense that this is a legitimate source, that that is a branding exercise, that you're being featured alongside likely very prominent fellow publishers. And that, I think, is maybe gets sometimes lost in the anxiety that the industry has around referral traffic. And to your kind of research, the fact that there is so little click-throughs that we're seeing from these mm-hmm. these kind of overviews,
yeah.
does that come up at all in conversations?
Well, I think it's the perception of the opportunity is going to differ, right? If I'm, a publisher that routinely just like wins in SERPs, day in and day out, you're a top five result every single time, you're going to perceive the rise of AI search differently from a company that has no shot to win that SERP mm-hmm. placement. And it does matter, right? Because broadly, this is it's a moving target, but like broadly, when you look at consumer perception of like AI responses, like they're broadly perceived as trustworthy, right? Like it's not 100%, but it's well over 50. And so if you are, kind of a challenger brand or challenger publisher, and you can't kind of break through and what have been legacy kind of distribution surfaces, like you probably do look at this a little bit differently when it's a chance to sort of be on the same plane as your, bigger, better funded competitors. So
yeah.
It's definitely worth considering. Yeah, so that I think that's absolutely a valid thing to think about.
This podcast is brought to you by Awin. Whatever your marketing challenge, whether it's reaching new audiences, stretching limited resources, or driving stronger results, Awin helps you find the partners who can solve it. Our platform connects brands with trusted partners who enhance your campaigns and only get paid when they deliver real outcomes. If you're ready to make every channel stronger and every dollar work harder, visit awin.com and see how we can make your marketing do more.
Lily, I wanted to ask you, a large part of your session not only looked at some of the latest research that you were analyzing in this field, but provided some examples of what's working well as a bit of a guide for the audience. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you could just elaborate on a few of those.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the first thing to keep in mind is that, and I mentioned this a bit in my talk, but how large language models work, and in many cases what the language model is doing is it's pulling from top-ranking results in search engines, which I think a lot of people don't necessarily make that connection. So I argue that one of the best things you can do is to be as visible as possible in search for the questions that you care about. Literally, like, try to rank number one in search, because there's a very strong correlation between what the LLMs are pulling in and what's ranking well in search. But beyond that, we're seeing more and more over time that there's certain types of content structures that really tend to get cited more. So for one, I mentioned having like a TLDR or like a very concise answer to the question, ideally at the top of the page or close to the top of the page, that really answers the question. There's certain types of pages that are doing really well. So we've seen there's a lot of debate in this space right now, but like listicles, so like 10 list items that kind of rank certain products or whatever, or comparison pages that might compare two different companies to one another, question and answer pages and FAQ pages. So really anything that's like really easy for an agent or a large language model to come to the page and say, we see a really clear answer to this question in one place that we can pull in really easily. Before you might have had the answer kind of dispersed throughout the content, but now having like one block that really answers the question. So we're kind of just like tightening things up in the content. So it's easier for them when they come in, they don't have to scan the entire page to get the point. They find one block that really answers the question.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned at the very start there about like the correlation between kind of core SEO principles and what's then earning AI visibility. What are the differences mm-hmm. there? Where are the kind of the things that maybe don't matter as much as the signal for Google search, for instance, that do matter more for LLMs?
What the LLMs are doing is they're not only pulling from the top ranking results, that's one part of the process, but they're trying to corroborate what they found with third-party information. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at what do people on Reddit say about this? What do people on LinkedIn say about it? What's being said on like Wikipedia and other user-generated content websites to kind of corroborate the answer. So backlinking and off-site metrics have always mattered a lot for SEO. I think we've been very, very focused on building links. Mm-hmm. Now we're much more focused on what are people saying about our brand? How many times is our brand mentioned across relevant sources that the LLMs are looking at? So it becomes much more of like a PR activity.
Yeah.
Maybe a question for both of you, but this idea of maybe all the different digital channels that we have access to, how would you advise brands to think about maybe SEO an affiliate as complementary channels rather than historically, I think we've always maybe seen them as either very separate or even competing.
One of the things that's so interesting, and Lily touched on this a moment ago, is that like the picture or the sort of, you know, disparate sources that all these LLMs draw on to get their answers does kind of put brands that invest in affiliate in an interesting position, especially for those that have diversified their partner mix in such a way. Like if you're investing in creators and user generated content and you know, creators who are really active on lots of different social networks, like that potentially provides a boost to your visibility that, you know, really was not considered at all when you were purely thinking about ranking in Google. And so, you know, there's a way in which if you kind of put affiliate at the center of your thinking about distribution or visibility, like it allows you to think about this in a way that's more holistic than like might have been the legacy standard or norm. But
I think one thing where they are pretty different right now, or something that's different for affiliate sites now compared to where we were before with organic search. We know we mentioned before that Google cracked down on lots of different types of affiliate content. Another big example of that was in 2024, Google launched a new spam policy called site reputation abuse. And many companies that had a lot of affiliate content, Google just basically said, you can have that content, but we're not going to allow it to be indexable in our organic search results because it's basically pay-to-play content. Where things are different now is it turns out that large language models are using a lot of that pay-to-play content to answer organic questions. I don't know how long that's going to be the case, but it seems to be a really big lever that, you know, people can pull to basically influence what appears in AI search answers. So I think right now there's actually more opportunity for affiliate sites and for brands that want to get on those kind of sponsored articles to actually use that tactic to influence what appears in AI search. The only difference is we don't know how long that might be the case. There might be a day when OpenAI has its own site reputation abuse policy, but that might be a long time away from now.
I wanted to ask you, pick you up on that, actually, because Adrian on the panel from Linkbee earlier talked about the fact that this feels very much like a Wild West, Gold Rush era right now, advantages to the first movers. When you compare this, what's happening right now in the LLM space particularly, to the early days of SEO, and you've been working, was it 16 years?
Yeah.
Are there parallels here, or do you think it feels quite different?
There's absolutely parallels, yeah. I talk a lot about what I call the cycle of SEO. So basically the idea is there's some type of new opportunity or set of opportunities that SEOs discover now, GEOs and AEOs, AI search people discover. They all kind of shout from the mountaintops, right? They go on YouTube, they go to conferences, they share all these approaches. It becomes highly popularized, and then suddenly you have a giant footprint of the internet that's engaging in these types of tactics. Google hates this. They don't want people trying to manipulate their search algorithms, and I'm sure OpenAI is starting to see the same thing with a lot of the spam in ChatGPT. So they patch it, they introduce algorithm updates and penalties and things like this, and that tactic stops working, and then we're right back to square one where we need to find new tactics, right? And I think right now we're absolutely in a gold rush where there's all kinds of ways that people are trying to trick, you know, AI responses and manipulate what appears in there. And I think the companies are a bit behind in cleaning that up, but I think they're not done yet. I foresee within the next year probably some very big changes to how they show content and rank content and everything. But definitely it feels a lot like SEO before they had a web spam team at Google.
Yeah.
And it feels too like the cycle that you laid out is probably going to play out over a shorter time horizon, right? Because, you know, all of these platforms, even though they've posted really eye-popping growth, like you had a slide about this, ChatGPT's user base is kind of plateauing a little bit. And like, they're not going to be able to reverse that if people get the impression that every time they ask ChatGPT a question, the answer is going to be shaped by a bunch of like shady, you know, kind of 21st century black hat garbage. And so,
I mean, I think that's what Anthropic's like brand campaign is basically premised on, right? Is this idea of like, oh, they're injecting ads now. It's a commercial outcomes. It's being manipulated. It's not really something you can trust. Whereas, you know, with Claude, this is something that is actually much more genuine.
That's right. And they have to just, they have to be, I think, very vigilant from a branding and kind of, you know, future growth perspective. If they want that stuff to continue, they're going to have to, you know, crack down on this stuff a lot more quickly.
Yeah, and it's important to remember, I think it's a bit naive to assume that these companies won't be able to figure it out. I think they'll actually be able to figure it out faster than Google ever could, right? Because they're AI companies, they're LLM companies. What LLMs are really good at is pattern matching, right? So if you start to see a bunch of people doing something that kind of skews from like whatever training data they're focused on, and they can see spam patterns more easily. So I think it's just a question of when they figure it out. And you're going to want to be the type of brand that wasn't engaging in those tactics, because what we've seen with SEO over the years is you would have been better off not doing those things in the first place, even if it worked for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Where it lands you after those 6 months, it's often very, very hard to recover.
Yeah.
You mentioned this is kind of like through your career, the last 16 years, this has been like the most exciting thing that has come into the space as an update, or like mm-hmm. as all these things are changing. I guess, could you maybe elaborate on that? I know for we've sure. talked about it a little bit, but what is so exciting about this?
I think for people that work in our industry, the exciting thing about it is that SEOs are finally getting a seat at the table.
Yeah.
Even though they're calling it GEO and calling it different things, the reality is the most qualified people to help with this are SEO professionals, because ultimately this is search. We're optimizing for search. Historically, it's been very, very hard to get companies and clients to take SEO seriously. We've always had attribution challenges. We've always had, takes a long time to see results and everything. But suddenly everyone's like, how do I show up in large language models? And it's like, well, you want to make sure your search is buttoned up. So I think it's exciting for us, not only because we are able to do so many SEO workflows and processes so much more quickly with AI. That part's very exciting. We're also able to build things we could never build before, because now suddenly everybody can be a developer with things like Claude Code. But just the fact that clients are enthusiastic about SEO, for more enthusiastic than they've ever been in the 16 years I've been doing this.
Yeah. Well, and also to your point, like about the time horizon of seeing results, like it's not 3 to 6 months anymore. You know, if you seed things in the right place, you can start burbling up in responses within weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know better what the
even
likes
days, are. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a good way to get hired.
For sure.
Yeah.
Give me 30 days.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wanted to ask you, Max, about like creator is very much your space and your expertise, and I'm not sure if that came up so much necessarily in the conversation today. But how are you thinking about like the implications of this for the creator economy and how it affects them?
So there's a way in which it's similar to affiliate in that it is very well positioned, but there are some sort of misalignments that need to be sort of popped into joint for it to really, really, you know, matter and deliver. But creators as a kind of like publisher class are potentially going to have huge role to play in GEO and affiliate as well, because as we talked about on stage, like LLMs really, really value feedback from regular people. Mm-hmm. They really value creator content, user-generated content. You see that in the responses, like the top 10 sites that are cited most frequently, the domains, half of them are just basically like repositories of creator content. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, those sites have built their businesses on it, so that's really not going anywhere. The difference and the kind of misaligned pieces relate mostly to like creators understanding the role that they play in it and also the kinds of content they create, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, Lily went into this in great depth on stage, but like the stuff that an LLM really desperately wants and needs, right, is sort of like comparison information, specific specs, context specific information about products or services. That's not necessarily always going to wind up in a creator post, right? Mm-hmm. Like the things that creators are really great at is being, you know, direct, winsome, charming, maybe shocking, maybe funny. That's all fine for getting noticed and shared on social media. It's not necessarily going to work quite as well for LLMs. Mm. But what I think you will start to see among a certain class of creators is kind of a development of a parallel content operation where it's like, I've got this one post that like, there's a portion of it that's really funny that I'll put on TikTok, mm-hmm. but there's a more kind of in-depth, sober, like, now I'm going to take this apart and show you like why I actually think this is great. And maybe I put that on YouTube. Maybe I like, you know, cut it up into things that I distribute on LinkedIn, whatever. And so you have this ability to really give the LLMs and the brand partners a chance to, you know, appear in really important contexts. But that's going to take time. And so is the compensation piece of this too, right? Like most creators I know, you know, to the extent that they know what AI visibility is, they have very little kind of like means to sort of say or gather up the data needed to say, my content's actually really valuable to you partners and you prospective partners, so let's talk. But again, we're so early that like I think in a couple, 3 years, we're gonna, the creators that get that and kind of embrace the upside there are gonna really benefit.
Yeah. One thing I was really interested in is, particularly on the creator side, is that that field has increasingly become, the medium by default is video and it's visual.
Yep.
Whereas the way that the LLMs seem to give primacy to the content they're ingesting is primarily text-based and copy-based. Is that changing? Is video becoming a more valuable asset for them to digest? And does it require transcripting, or can they take the visuals themselves?
Yeah, it depends on the LLM, but like Google, for one, prides itself on being what they call multimodal. Mm-hmm. So it's able to ingest all types of different content formats, and I think this is increasingly becoming true with LLMs. So, you know, we see Google, I mean, obviously Google owns YouTube, so that's important to point out, but Google really seems to be prioritizing YouTube in AI-generated responses, and I think they just get so much of that great, authentic, kind of human conversation within the video that it often answers a lot of the questions people are asking about. But I do think video, audio, images, all of this is a new playing field because LLMs are able to understand a lot of that content much better. But I would still recommend, you know, make sure if you're uploading videos and things to your site that you're looking at transcripts. I think YouTube does it automatically, but not every video provider does. But that transcript is really going to help kind of solidify what they know about the video.
Yeah.
And I feel like to Lily's point, like the transcription doesn't get you all the way there, like, but it gets you pretty close. And so as long as you're investing in that and there are tools at hand, whether it's the native stuff on YouTube or elsewhere, like that's a reasonably solvable problem. But it's one that everyone should be looking at, right? Because I think that the LLMs, again, because they really are hyper-focused on sources of kind of authentic human feedback and information, are going to prioritize those platforms, which are all, you know, trying to incorporate more video, whether they're video native like YouTube or Instagram, which is, you know, indexable in Google. We're just going to, you know, video is eating all of our media time. And so it's going to be a bigger component moving forward.
Yeah.
I was going to ask a really quick question. You've both touched on like geo tactics as well. And then Lily, I know you mentioned that there are actually tactics there that could very much have a knock-on or negative impact to SEO strategy and then ultimately AI visibility. Can you expand on that a little bit just for people that weren't in the session?
So this is actually probably the place that I've put most of my focus over the last few months because, again, there's so many people entering into the conversation right now that might have very limited SEO experience. And if we think about that cycle, if you jump on the bandwagon really early without understanding what happens throughout that cycle where a lot of popular tactics become demoted or penalized over time, I think right now we're in this phase where so I give the example of what I call self-promotional listicles. So you can put a blog on your website that says, who are the best companies in our category? And then you list your competitors at 2 through 10, but number one is your own company. You talk about how great you are, and then maybe you talk about your competitors being really bad. It turns out this actually influences LLMs in a really big way. And a lot of people have discovered this. So a lot of people have made not only one of these articles, but 500 or in some cases 2,000 such articles on their website. And the reality is eventually Google usually catches on to this. It's a version of spam, according to Google. And I think the AI providers are starting to figure this out. So I think right now we're in this space where a lot of people have found these exploits and kind of these hacks to try to influence what appears in LLMs. And then they've used AI to kind of like accelerate it, create a lot of that content. And I've been trying to like raise a flag because that's my space. And in the SEO space, I've always been the one to help with algorithm updates and everything. I anticipate, based on what Google's done for 20 plus years, we will see a massive, massive algorithm update similar to the Panda, the Penguin, the helpful content. We've had so many of these in Google's history where they're going to go against exploitative GEO tactics, and you're not going to want to be wiped out from Google search with all this stuff. So you just have to be very careful.
I'd be curious to see, too, you brought this up in your presentation, but like whether there's a version of a future state where the FTC is also kind of a really big piece of this, too. Like the potential now exists to really take kind of, you know, anti-competitor GEO to a whole new level. Like it would be very easy to sort of pay a legion of creators to go on to YouTube and talk about how crappy your competitors' products and services are. And, you know, boost yourself in the process. Until these systems get smarter, like, I think there'll be a little bit of time where they figure it out. But, like, potentially, if the, you know, FTC wants to take a more proactive stance, they could start just, like, bringing the hammer down and saying, this is going to cost you 200 grand, this is going to cost you $500,000, because, you know, today, that is illegal. And so I think there's a chance where they could also sort of provide a chilling effect on anything that, you know, might be perceived as not great.
I think it's as much about the speed with which this stuff can happen as it is the scale. And this is what these tools have kind of enabled now, is that anybody really can suddenly produce or adopt a tactic, and it goes from day zero to a reality really quickly, but a volume and a size that maybe historically would have taken a lot longer to do. And with regulatory or trade bodies like the FTC, do they have the speed to be able to anticipate or react to this stuff in time for it to prevent it becoming like a big, big issue?
Probably not today.
No.
But, you know.
But they have maybe access to the same tools themselves, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. That's right.
Thanks for listening to this episode of A Win-Win Marketing Podcast.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with tech partner Upsellit and US-based performance agency eAccountable.
Until then, thanks again for listening to A Win-Win Marketing Podcast, where we show you how partner marketing always offers a win-win.
Goodbye.
Bye.